This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
You've been lost in the woods for hours now, stumbling around in the dark. You come around the bend and see two people roasting marshmallows over a roaring fire. They see you coming into the clearing and gesture over to pull up a log. Welcome to Campfire Ashes. I'm Paul.
And I'm Jess. Join us as we tell each other our originally written spooky stories around the campfire and then dive into the lore and legends that inspired them. Is it something that goes bump in the night? Is it something menacing lurking past the tree line? Or is it just weird and otherworldly? You'll find it here on Campfire Ashes.
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, or right here on the Geekscape Network.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Before My Time. I am your host, Kelsey Laurie, and we are joined, as always, with our co-host, producer, and best friend, Matt Kelly. That's right, Matt Kelly, you are the show's best friend. And Matt's going to share his information on some early female stand-up comedians, the ones that paved the way, the pioneers, we say. Haha, let's go.
We're here to entertain you. We'll sing your songs for good times, the best times. You can't go wrong. We'll two-step, a new step. It won't be long when the Dixielands are playing. Soon you'll be swaying, so come on, sing along.
Kelsey, we are in the middle of the final season of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, a show that has been, I mean, I think that the first season of Marvelous Mrs. Maisel is among one of the finest seasons of television. Like, the first season is incredible.
I agree. I feel like it just kind of, I didn't watch the last season because I was, when it came out, I was like, you know what? I love this show, but I'm good with where it was at. Like, I'm good.
This season so far, I'm just like, man, we're wasting a lot of episodes for the final season on stuff that doesn't matter, as far as I can tell. But I want to talk a little bit about Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. And we'll start with this. The show is created by Amy Sherman-Palladino. For those of you who don't know Amy Sherman-Palladino, she got her start in writing as a writer on Roseanne. Through that show, she was able to create and show run her first TV show, which was Gilmore Girls, which was a wild success. For one season, she did a show called Bunheads, which I personally really, really loved.
Well, I used to be a bunhead. Like, that's how I grew up, was like literally that.
Bunheads did not do well. And then her career kind of stalled out until Marvelous Mrs. Maisel came around and really like rejuvenated it. Amy Sherman-Palladino's career. She created the show as a combination of her nostalgia of her father being a struggling stand-up comedian in the Bronx during the 50s and 60s, and her admiration for female comics of that time period, specifically Joan Rivers and Tutti Fields, who are the two biggest influences on the character of Midge. So I wanted to dive into, like, who are some of the other comics that were inspiration to the show and just kind of important? Because, you know, in this day and age, there are probably just as many female comics as male comics. Mm-hmm. That was absolutely not the case or the norm for many, many
I feel
years.
Like just until up in recent, I'm going to look this up while you talk a little, but I would say probably statistically there's still more men.
Probably statistically, but definitely I would say that 80s, you started to see female comics get a little bit more leverage. 90s for sure, because then you started getting like Roseanne, Ellen DeGeneres, like a lot of them started to break through. And now, I mean, there's just so many. There's so many, and it's great. The adage back then in the 20s, 30s, 40s was just that women weren't funny. So in early roles for women who considered themselves comedic, they kind of exclusively were just romantic interests or like the singing, dancing character in a vaudeville act. The most that you would ever really see with a woman doing comedy at that time was as a pair up with another male comic. So some examples of that would have been like Gracie Allen and George Burns, Mike Nichols and Elaine May, or Gene Carl and Buddy Howe. But there were a handful of female comics that were able to break through and become successful as solo acts. So I wanted to talk about a few of them. Now, do you remember in Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, the introduction of Sophie Lennon, who was the kind of the rival female comic that would wear the fat suit?
Jane Lynch,
and do,
right?
Like Jane Lynch's character. Yes. So she was based around the concept of Moms Mabel. Do you know Moms Mabel?
Mm-mm.
All right. She is often credited as the first female stand-up comedian of all time, which is extra impressive because not only was she a woman, but she was also gay and black. She played a character of Moms who was inspired by her own grandmother. So it involved her wearing a giant loose dress and a big funny hat, and she would make it appear that she had no teeth. And she would basically tell stories that would be these jokes about race and stuff that was going on in life, but filled with sexual innuendo and double entendres. It was pretty edgy for the time. And you think about it now, like, that tradition has still continued, right? The concept of, like, the offensive old lady who doesn't realize what she's saying. And obviously, in my mind, I'm like, oh, this even feels like modern-day Tyler Perry is doing. Mm-hmm. Madea feels very inspired by Moms. The other woman who is often classified as the first female comic is Phyllis Diller.
Oh, I've heard that.
And unfortunately, the reason for this is that Phyllis Diller was white. Moms was very popular in like an underground club kind of way, but white audiences really didn't know of her existence until the late 60s, whereas Phyllis Diller kind of popped off in the 30s. But that's okay, because Phyllis Diller was also comedically great. Phyllis Diller kind of broke the false concept that women weren't funny, so much so that for years she held the Guinness Book of World Records for the most laughs in a single minute. She had a rapid-fire, wisecracking delivery. Her character was usually that of a hapless housewife, so she would wear exaggerated makeup and lots of costumes and crazy hairstyles, and she had an iconic cackle that everyone knows. It was kind of like a, like, she just, if you look up Phyllis Diller, you'll go, oh, I've seen this woman.
Yeah.
Her comedy was way more self-deprecating. It was usually about her failing marriage with her husband. I feel like Phyllis Diller, when you look at her, there's almost an element of, I get a little bit of like drag culture from her. Like,
yeah.
It's got that very flamboyant over exaggeration with everything.
Wait.
The clothes, the hair, the makeup.
Her,
like,
her older is like looking into my future. Like,
yeah.
That's going to be me.
Yeah, 100%. I feel like you would love Phyllis Diller for sure.
That's going to be me, Matt. Oh my God, this is a problem. Okay.
Let's talk about the two comedians who inspired the character of Midge.
Okay.
We've got Joan Rivers.
Of course.
Joan Rivers kind of started her career in New York alongside Woody Allen in the 50s. What set Joan apart from Phyllis Diller and Moms is that Joan is the first female comic to just be herself. She wasn't playing a character. She wasn't playing an exaggeration of it. She didn't lean onto a specific character. She was just a single Jewish girl who spoke about all of the different things going on in her life, gender issues, and politics.
Super Midgey.
Similar to, exactly how Midge is depicted.
Yeah.
And this is kind of interesting, and also I feel like kind of sad, because Joan Rivers, as I said, started in the 50s. She was the first woman to ever host a late night talk show in 1986. So
wow.
36 years into her career, they finally said, oh, maybe a woman can hold her own on the late night. It was called The Late Show with Joan Rivers, which I think was kind of we've had the Late Show for years, so I think it wasn't like created specifically for her, but whoever the previous host is that left, they brought in Joan the same way they do with the Tonight Show and various other
shows. I just want to follow up on my search earlier. I wanted to give you the statistics of stand-up comedians today. Today, mm-hmm. it is a 27% female ratio to 73% men in the stand-up world. So it's still very much so a boys' world. Yeah, I don't want to undercredit all the women still trying to push through today and be something, which there are more, but still, that's not very high.
Yeah, no, not at all. And then finally, Tutty Fields, who is the one that I knew the least about. I had known about Moms. I definitely knew Phyllis Diller and Joan Rivers, because I feel like they've always kind of, I mean, Joan Rivers up until the day she died was, you know, doing red carpet events and you know, guest appearances and stuff. And but Tutty unfortunately passed in her 40s. She was a Jewish comedian from New England who really started to see her star rise after Ed Sullivan saw her perform at the Copacabana and booked her to be on his show. She did a ton of late night show appearances. And interestingly enough, through doing late night television, she met the band Kiss, and her and Gene Simmons became like the best of friends up until the day she died. Apparently because when they were on a show together, she joked, "I bet underneath all that scary makeup, you're just a very nice Jewish boy." And Gene Simmons said, "Oh, if you only knew." And she they had like a nice kind of playful back and forth from there. Oh, I do want to mention this too, because I thought it was funny. She wrote a humorous diet book just called "I Think I'll Start on Monday."
I love that.
But unfortunately, that was a little tongue-in-cheek because she did suffer seriously from diabetes, which led to a lot of blood clotting and then led to her losing a leg. They had to amputate a leg from blood clots. And while she was I missed something there. She lost her leg, and then just before she was supposed to start a residency in Vegas, she died from blood clots in her sleep. So
cut back on that Coca-Cola, folks.
Yeah.
Just tying into
another episode. Go back to last week's episode and avoid that.
Cut out that song. Wait, that's sad, though.
Now, the last person I want to mention obviously steps outside of the realm of female comedians that inspired Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. But if we're talking about these historic female comedy personalities, there's a couple that need to be mentioned. First and foremost, one of your all-time favorites, Gilda Radner. What Gilda Radner did for sketch comedy, being a woman, and really, like, we've mentioned this before, but you watch those first two or three years of SNL, and
it's the Gilda show.
If she's not the most fearless, outrageous performer on that show, she's second only to the hurricane that was John Belushi. You know what
they
I mean?
They were like so different, though. It is true that he was outrageous, but she wasn't like a very. I feel like he was just more like, "I'm on drugs," kind of outrage. And
when you watch all of those, though, those are the two that are really throwing their bodies all over the place for the sake of comedy. Like they are. She makes me so happy fearless.
When she just throws herself against a wall. Like it's so great. Comedy never. We've said this from very early on in this podcast.
We will do a Gilda episode.
And it's coming.
But I also want to mention another person that I feel like gets overshadowed in the early SNLs, which is, of course, Jane Curt.
She is so underrated. You go back and watch it. Like, her timing, her and Dan Aykroyd together are.
And that's what I was going to say. She was pretty progressive as being, like, a political comedian on a late night sketch show. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure the first female weekend update anchor personality. Really, really underrated. I love Gilda. Gilda is the GOAT for many, many reasons, but don't sleep on Jane.
When we did our first 5 years of SNL episode, I did like a huge shout out to her, and I was like, we never talk about her, and she just deserves so much more credit and praise because she had me laughing so hard. And Gilda's the GOAT, but.
And then the last two that I have to mention, while they didn't start as stand-up comedians in any way, they started on Broadway and turned that into a lovely career as comedic actresses on television, but you have to mention Lucille Ball and Carol Burnett.
I knew, I was like, Carol Burnett's one of them. Oh, yeah. No, they are female women pioneers in
yeah,
the comedy
so,
world.
But I wanted to at least give them shout outs. They are definitely not part of the category that we're talking about of like actual women who went up on a stage with just a microphone
yeah.
and a lot of opinions. But what those two women did for comedy and the progression of female comedy in a very still, as we pointed out, male dominated career is important, especially Lucille, who like had a lot of power, like
for
a woman of that time
her
period.
Book, and it was really yeah. good. I highly recommend it. Very interesting. Her progression into her comedic roles, because she used to be more of like a 1930s actress. She was really good yeah. friends with Ginger Rogers, and Ginger's mother took a lot of these actresses under her wing and helped them. And she really highly helped Lucille Ball's career and kind of guide her in this, that. So yeah, no, she has a really incredible story. Highly recommend. And then also we have an episode on the Carol Burnett Show, so if you want to learn more
we
about
do
that,
with my friend Katie Hampton, who will be married by the time this episode comes out.
Congratulations,
so congratulations,
Katie.
We'll talk about some of our more modern female comics that we're a fan of after this quick break.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You've been lost in the woods for hours now, stumbling around in the dark. You come around the bend and see two people roasting marshmallows over a roaring fire. They see you coming into the clearing and gesture over to pull up a log. Welcome to Campfire Ashes. I'm Paul.
And I'm Jess. Join us as we tell each other our originally written spooky stories around the campfire and then dive into the lore and legends that inspired them. Is it something that goes bump in the night? Is it something menacing lurking past the tree line? Or is it just weird and otherworldly? You'll find it here on Campfire Ashes.
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, or right here on the Geekscape Network.
91 Donkey Lane is a magical apartment complex that contains immense power, but lacks intelligent inhabitants.
What is happening?
I'm getting texts.
Why are we getting a lot of texts?
People found out what we did.
Oh, dividing Mike Myers into an infinite amount of tiny Mike Myers?
Listen to 91 Donkey Lane for free on Spotify or your favorite podcasting app. More at 91donkeylane.com. See you there, you donkeys.
You know, Gelsey, you and I are both some comedy-loving fans, and I think in a very recent episode, we threw a lot of praise on Wanda Sykes as one of like our all-time favorites. But there's a lot of women out there doing some top-notch comedy that, you know, be it what we grew up with on the 90s or in the 2000s, are worth us giving a little bit of a shout out. So who were some of the ones that you remember loving when you were a kid first showing an interest in comedy? And we can expand this outside of standing in front of a microphone if we need to just like...
Yeah, because as a child, you don't watch stand-up.
You don't, no. And I was going to say, like, not. I don't believe she ever walked up to a microphone, but I've been doing a rewatch of Seinfeld, and Julie Louise Dreyfus is like, I think I didn't appreciate how much she puts into that character in every, like, she's like a scene stealer in that show that I did not recognize as a child watching it.
Yeah. I would say any, like, I grew up on so many sitcoms. Yeah. And so it's like all the females in the sitcom world really like, I don't remember the comedian's name, but we watched the Drew Carey Show all the time, and Mimi.
Yes. Oh,
I mean,
my God.
That was, I was so young watching her, you know, play this like extreme character and laughing at things that I didn't even understand. You know, I was still at that phase when like if my parents laughed, I laughed. And I'm like, oh, this is funny. I would say Saturday Night Live. I mean, I always throw it back to them and how much it shaped me. But Molly Shannon, Sherry O'Terry, Anna Gasteyer, like those are the women that I saw. I watch SNL probably way too young. But those are the women that I grew up with seeing females be just as funny, if not funnier and outrageous as the men and stuff. And so it's, they really shaped me a lot as comedians. And then I was always watching, like, even growing up, Lucille Ball, Carol Burnett, like, I would say some of that, everyone we just mentioned, I still was exposed to as a child, which is awesome. I did want to do a quick throw out to someone very new and who I've been getting into lately. She's still on her journey. She has two Netflix specials out now. Taylor Tomlinson is...
I was just about to mention her. I have seen so many people share her stuff. And
she
is
so fucking funny. And it's her first special on Netflix, Quarter Life Crisis. I watched, and there's some things I'm like, I'm not laughing the whole time, but there was a lot of relatable stuff. And I'm like, she's funny. Her new special, I was like, oh, she's funny. She's just getting, she was 25 on her first one. I think she was 29 on her second. And now seeing some of the stuff she's putting out on Instagram for the tour she's currently on, like, it, I feel like I am watching her develop into the comedian she's going to become. And she's just getting funnier and funnier. And I love, I mean, she talks about being, you know, in your late 20s, like, where being an adult in that awkward phase, being single, having mental health issues, depression, medication for being bipolar. And it's, I love, she goes there, but it's just really fucking funny. There's a whole bit that she talks about trying to, like, get a guy to wear a condom in his late 20s off of a dating app. And, like, her analogy, I was in tears. I have shown everyone. I'm like, this is the funniest fucking thing ever. She's, like, the one that stands out to me as, like, a new up-and-coming great female comedian.
Someone that I don't think we associate with stand-up comedy anymore, even the because she's just become so famous from TV show appearances. But literally anytime you put Aubrey Plaza in front of a microphone...
Oh, she's so funny.
This is why... Anytime that she does anything at any award show, it goes viral, is that she's just honed this perfect deadpan delivery of stuff.
Yeah.
And one from the 90s that I love to death and just really, I mean, if you talk about, you know, these early women in the 50s and 60s and how they pushed, like, what was acceptable for a woman to say on stage. I've got to give credit to Sarah Silverman.
I was like, she was the next person I was going to say, too. Yeah, I did watch her stand up all the time.
She, said things that you did not know it was okay for anyone, male or female, to say on stage.
I know. There was one thing she said, I remember, and it was in, I forget what special it is, and she's talking about how, like, her grandmother died, but they're trying to convict the guy, like, oh, she was raped and then death. It's something like crazy. And she's standing there and it looks like she's in this mournful, like, and she goes, oh God, please just let them find cum in my dead grandmother. And like, that's what, and you're just like, oh my God. And I remember just like all of us laughing because it's like she's really good at that shock factor, but she'll play it so normal instead of being like, I'm gonna say this crazy thing, pussy. Like, it's this just so, and then she'll drop a line like that you're like, oh dear God. But it's so, I used to love the Sarah Silverman program.
Her book,
I did
Bed,
watch that
Bedwetter,
a lot.
Is fantastic as well.
Is it? I need to, yeah.
And the Sarah Silverman program was so funny. In the world of sketch, like you said, the whole SNL thing, when you, especially you bring in people like Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, who are just
Tina
like,
Tina Fey's my God. Like, she is.
Like, incredible. And even right now, I feel like I am loving almost every woman that's on the current cast of SNL because they're so weird. They're
incredible.
So strange and weird.
I love what's going on right now. Chloe Fineman is a genius. She's brilliant.
What's it, Sarah Squirm? Like, Sarah Squirm to me is so uncomfortable that it's like, I love it.
Brilliantly, yeah.
Her fighting with Colin Jost on Weekend Update is like never not the funniest thing to me.
so good. I want to give a shout out to Tiffany Haddish too. She's one of my faves.
Yes.
And she's absolutely great. If you haven't seen David Letterman's show for my next guest needs no introduction, and he sits down and does like these long interviews with everybody. I mean, he's got the Kardashians on, Robert Downey Jr., Obama, everyone. And Tiffany Haddish is one of his guests, and it's an incredible episode. And just, I mean, within 5 minutes, she's just so vulnerable and crying about the upbringing. And it's so cool to hear her journey and even like how comedy kind of saved her from living a rough life on the streets and got her out. Yeah. She was living out of her car as a teenager, just trying to be a comedian, and a really inspiring story. But she's funny too. There's a handful of comedians too that I will say, like, I watch some specials on Netflix and within 10 minutes I'm like, you know, I don't want to like shit talk anyone. Amy Schumer, I really like.
Amy Schumer, like, I was gonna also say
Whitney
Nicole
Cummings is
Breyer,
one I turn off a lot. I'm not gonna lie.
I can't get
she
into
gets
Whitney.
Praise
I
and
want
I don't
to.
Get it.
Nicole Breyer, I always want to give a shout out to. I'm not in love with her specific stand up, but like, she is the glue that makes Nailed It such an enjoyable show to watch, because she's so quick in those situations of watching these people just do a terrible job at cooking something, and the analogies that she'll just pull out of her ass to describe what the food tastes like. If you've never watched Nailed It, Gelsey, you should absolutely...
I know what it is,
will
but
find
I haven't
so much
watched
joy
it.
Out of watching it. It is your sense okay. of humor for sure. Of
and
just
I need
like
a good show to throw on, like,
and
that
that's what
is kind of mindless and just in the background. Like, I've been looking for I don't want to start a new fucking series. I don't want to pay attention.
This is
want
perfect
friends
for you. Then
on the TV, great. Yeah, okay, I'll watch Nailed It. That and I need to watch The Great British Bake Off because I like
totally different vibe.
It just reminded me of, you know, at least you're baking and there's comedians on the panel that are just commentating. Yeah. Like those are two shows on my list. All right, yeah, I'll do
that. Yeah, and they're great background noise. But Gelsey, if there is other great background noise, I don't know where I'm going with this analogy, but people can tell us about it.
If you have a show that you like to put on that makes you laugh, but you don't really have to pay the fuck attention because my brain doesn't want to, please let us know. You can find us on Instagram at beforemytime_podcast or on Facebook. Just type in Before My Time. We will pop up right on our wall. DM us, send us a comment on our latest post, and give us your insights on life. Tell me what the fuck life is all about because I'm struggling here. And share your favorite female comedian as well. You know, spread the love. Speaking of spreading love, if you have a moment, we would love if you spread your love and gave us a 5-star review and had some time to write some kind words. It gives us an opportunity to give in front of more listeners like yourself. Thank you so much for tuning in and hope to see you next week. Bye.
You've been lost in the woods for hours now, stumbling around in the dark. You come around the bend and see two people roasting marshmallows over a roaring fire. They see you coming into the clearing and gesture over to pull up a log. Welcome to Campfire Ashes. I'm Paul.
And I'm Jess. Join us as we tell each other our originally written spooky stories around the campfire and then dive into the lore and legends that inspired them. Is it something that goes bump in the night? Is it something menacing lurking past the tree line? Or is it just weird and otherworldly? You'll find it here on Campfire Ashes.
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, or right here on the Geekscape Network.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.